and I say the Clippers, obviously you think the Clippers, you think the LA Clippers, but not many people you talk to that you can say, well, tell me. Called Bingo 40 Years in the NBA. It's available. I'm sure it would make a great gift if you've got a basketball junkie in your family, somebody who's into broadcasting, somebody who grew up who was a Clipper fan, or if you just want a good read from one of the great wordsmiths of a generation. Ralph Lawler is that guy, and he joins us on San Diego Sports 760. Ralph, always our pleasure. Darren Smith in San Diego, thank you so much.
Hey, Darren, thank you very much for that kind introduction. I appreciate it. Hope I can live up to it.
I'm sure you will, sir. You always do. How is retirement?
Retirement has been splendid. I didn't know what to expect, but it's been delightful. We spent half our year in Bend, Oregon during the good weather there, and then half the year where I am now in Sarasota, Florida, enjoying the Florida sunshine and sitting by the pool as I talk to you.
Oh, lovely. Well, I'm on the other side of the state. I'm visiting a parent of mine who lives in Port St. Lucie. So I also am enjoying some of that great weather, Ralph. How often are you? I know you tweet a lot about the Clippers. How much sports are you consuming after 40 years in the NBA? Almost, what, 60 years of broadcasting? What's it like? How involved? How much are you watching sports every day?
My sports passions are still the Clippers, the NBA. We watch virtually every single Clipper game. It's tough when we're here on the West Coast because the games in L.A. don't begin till 7:30 at night there, 10:30 at night here, so up to 1 o'clock in the morning watching basketball. But we do it nonetheless, and we follow the Chargers from my days in San Diego broadcasting the Chargers in the early 70s. We've been Charger fans throughout, including the move back to L.A. We still love our Sunday Charger games, for sure. We're not into the World Cup and that kind of stuff, but and I follow the Dodgers quite closely, and the Padres, for that matter, during the baseball season.
And when Ralph Lawler's watching a sporting event, out of curiosity, Ralph, I've wondered this about retired play-by-play voices. Are you doing play-by-play in your head, or maybe you're doing it out loud? Who knows? Are you watching a game the way you would broadcast a game?
I don't at all, but I do wind up grading the broadcasters more severely than I do the players of the teams. I can't help but do that, and I feel kind of guilty sometimes, and I think, oh, that was awful. But when I hear somebody who's really good, I go, now that's the way it's supposed to be done. And the majority of the guys do a great job. Some of them don't.
Well, I'll ask you about the ones that you think do a good job, Ralph, because I'm guessing you'll be a little bit more open on that. Who are the broadcasters that you really enjoy when you get a chance to listen?
Well, I miss Marv Albert. I thought Marv Albert was the voice of the NBA for so many years. And if you heard him do a game, you knew it was a big game. And you just kind of sat up a little bit extra sharp in your chair because you didn't want to miss anything that Marv had to say. I think Mike Green, who's kind of taken the mantle from him, does a very solid job. He's at his best, really, when he does New York Knicks games with Walt Frazier. The two of them are a spectacular pairing. I still like some of the great old voices. And we don't have a lot of great new voices, but Al McCoy, been doing radio. He's 89 years old now for the Phoenix Suns, and he has not missed the beat. It is a pleasure to hear him all the time. But I lament the fact that there just are not great voices. So many of today's young announcers sound just like each other. And there's nothing really distinctive about them. Ted Leitner, of course, a famed voice in San Diego, had that distinctive style. Nobody else sounded like Ted. And that was a tribute to him. And I think guys are afraid to just let it all hang out, and they try to sound like what their vision of a sports announcer is supposed to sound like. Vin Scully was a special voice, obviously, in baseball. Al Michaels still has that with his football. But there are not many young voices that have that distinctive, charismatic sound and energy to themselves.
And you think that's just based on younger broadcasters being a little apprehensive about showing personality, about being cookie cutter?
I guess maybe so. I don't know. I've helped train or mentor a number of young announcers over the years, and some still do currently call me occasionally and say, what about this? What about that? We listen to this. Brian Seaman, who overtook my job when I left the Clippers, I've urged him. I said, Brian, let us get to know you. He has two great kids and a lovely wife. I said, let us know you. Let us know when you go to Disneyland. Let us know what you and Amy are thinking about, or what you're doing, or how you spend your off season. Because all of a sudden, man, the listener or the viewer starts to feel like they know you, like you're a part of the family. I went from being a brother to the Clipper fans, to being a father, to being a grandfather to Clipper fans during my 40 years with the ball club in San Diego and L.A. And I think that's important, to let them get to know you. And when I spoke to players, Darren, I hardly ever talked about basketball with them, which kind of surprises some people. But you're going to get plenty of information, especially in today's internet age. You're going to get plenty of information about all the statistics and all the analytics and stuff, which you may not know about a guy and his family. You may not know what his hobbies are. You may not know how he spends an off day. You may not know what his preparation is on a game day, when he has his meals, what time he gets up, when does he have to get a nap, what sports does he watch on TV, or what else does he watch on TV? What's his favorite Netflix movie? You start sharing those things, and all of a sudden the fans now have a personal attention and affection for a player. I just think that's what it's all about. It's all about storytelling. The game kind of tells the story to itself, especially in television. You just sit back and watch the game along with the fans. And if you can give them a story here or there that they might not read about anyplace else or hear about, maybe they'll remember that telecast for that very reason.
The name of the book is Bingo, 40 Years in the NBA. Ralph Lawler, our guest, longtime voice of the Clippers from San Diego to Los Angeles. You brought up players, talking with players, and I had wondered about this. One of the challenges, yeah, I just turned 50, Ralph, not that, you know, that's important. This is about you and the book. And I've noticed a difference in just, you know, how to connect with players. You know, for 40 years, I'm sure you saw, you know, as you get a little older, the players would come in, they'd be about the same age when they got into the league, career expectancy about the same. How did you maintain a connection like that with the players here, even given the growing age disparity for you and newer players coming into the sport?
I think apart what I'm just talking about, that I would talk to players about them and about their lives and about their family. Chris Paul writes an introduction to the book. Chris, one of the great point guards the game has ever seen, and one of the brightest players I've ever dealt with. He writes in his introduction how I got to know not just him, but his wife, his mother, his father, his brother's wife, and his kids. They were like an extended part of our family, and they would all come up to us before a game, my wife Jo and me, and want to talk and share life's stories. When you do that, the fact that Chris is in his mid-30s and I'm approaching my mid-80s, it didn't make a difference, because we had a common connection that we cared about family. And I think that's how you bridge the gap. I'm still in touch with a number of players that played for our ball club over the years, some as far back as San Diego. And I think of Michael Cage and Ron Harper, who became a big star with a team in L.A. and then went on to championships with the Lakers and with Chicago. We are in touch. Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, who live here in Florida in the Orlando area. We stay in touch. Jamal Crawford up in Seattle. Doc Rivers, the coach, now in Philadelphia. Don Casey, who still lives in San Diego, who coached for a long time in the NBA. And on a couple of stints with the Clippers. We all stay in touch because our life was basketball, and when you're a part of the league in particular, or of an individual team, the ties bind forever. You know, they say everybody wants a Clipper, always a Clipper, and that is very, very true.
Ralph Lawler joining us on San Diego Sports 760. Ralph, for many people, they might not have even been alive when the Clippers started play in 1978 in San Diego, the former Buffalo Braves. Take us back, if you wouldn't mind. I'm pretty sure you were there from the first game of the season, but I know you were there for the first season of San Diego Clipper basketball. What was it like in San Diego for those of us that have no recollection of that whatsoever?
Well, I've got very vivid and very fond recollections of that year, and I was certainly there for the first game and the last game that the team played in San Diego. We were very excited. I was lucky because I had broadcast Philadelphia 76ers home games on TV in Philadelphia, and Gene Chu was the head coach. Gene was out of the league for a year, and when the team was formed in San Diego, which kind of a mixed match of a roster from the Boston Celtics and the Buffalo Braves, Gene was named the head coach. So I had, and we wound up both buying homes on the east side of the city, very close to each other. We could carpool into games and practices and to the airport and all that. So it was just, personally, it was just a lot of fun. But Gene, I knew what a good coach he was. The first day of practice, he realized he didn't have enough scoring punch. He went out and made a deal with his old Philadelphia team to acquire World B. Free, who was a scoring machine and scored, I think, 29 points a game 1 year for the Clippers and 30 points a game the next year, his all-star season. But expectations were very low because the Buffalo team had been a very bad team. So not much was expected out of this new breed San Diego basketball team. Yet we won 43 games and didn't fall out of the playoff picture until the final week of the season. They were fun to watch. Not enough people watched them, which is why there is no pro basketball in San Diego even today. The San Diego Rockets had failed. Two ABA teams, the Conquistadors and the Sales, had failed and folded. And so if there were 7,000 people at a game, it was a big deal. But every night was a big deal to us. We just thought it was so exciting to have a pro basketball team. As my first chance to be like a full-time team broadcaster, I loved every single second of it, Darren. And then the next summer, they had the biggest free agent signing in the history of the NBA when they signed Bill Walton to a 7 years, $7 million contract. And we thought, okay, here we go. We are going to be a championship team. We're going to, build a new legacy in San Diego. And this team will be here forever. And they'll be building a new arena for them. And, of course, none of that happened because Bill's body just kept breaking down, sadly. But, it was a bold move that nobody questioned when it was made.
Amazing. We're still trying to get that arena built, if you can believe it, Ralph. But that's another story for another day. Bill Walton says a lot of things. And, you know, sometimes he's very self-deprecating. But I've heard him say this, Ralph, that he feels like he failed his hometown because his body broke down. And so, you know, this big splashy move that the Clippers made to bring in Bill Walton and then potentially do all the things that you just referenced there never happened because physically it just it wasn't in the cards for Bill. How true do you think that is? I mean, who really can tell? Who really knows? But in a hypothetical, when Bill says that sort of stuff, is he being self-deprecating? Or do you think, you know, there is some truth to that, that had Bill been healthy and the Clippers had become successful, you know, who knows what the future might have been?
Well, there would have been. There's no question about that. But Bill didn't fail the city. His feet failed the city.
Right.
His body just couldn't take the rigors of playing in this league. He kept trying to come back and trying to come back, and he finally did wound up being sixth man of the year. I think he played like 78 or 80 games in that year with the Boston Celtics when they won their championship, his second NBA title. But that was it for him. He could not play thereafter. And it's really sad because Bill Walton would have been one of the not just great centers, but great players that ever lace him up in the NBA, that he had a 15-year career where he played 70, 80 games a year. I mean, he would have set a bunch of records. He would have just done things that are unthinkable in today's NBA. And that's a shame. He's the one that got cheated more than the city of San Diego or even the game of basketball. He just didn't get to experience the greatness that he was sure to have experienced.
Your broadcasting career didn't start with the Clippers. You were broadcasting in San Diego before that. Similar question, Ralph. What was life like calling Charger games in 1971?
Well, it was great. I've saddened today to hear the passing of John Hadle, who was the quarterback for those early 70s Charger teams and was a great gentleman, a repeated Pro Bowl, quarterback. Oddly enough, I wound up in later years when I was with the Clippers and spent the offseason selling real estate, and I sold Jimmy Lynam, who wound up being a Clipper coach. I sold him John Hadle's old house out in El Cajon. But John was a real gentleman, and I miss that. I dealt with some marvelous people during just 3 years with that football team. Gene Fine owned the team. They brought in Harlan Savari to coach the ball club. He had coached the Rams before that. And we got Lionel Aldridge. He got Johnny Unitas came in to be the quarterback of the team. Deacon Jones was brought in as a defensive end. And all of them had been great, great players. But that was 5 years earlier, unfortunately. And they didn't have a whole lot left. Dan Fouts wound up replacing Unitas, so I broadcast two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back-to-back there, Unitas' last game and Fouts' first game, and it was a pleasure. That the Chargers were not a very good team until Don Coryell came in to coach them to great success, but I have very, very happy memories of my time to the Chargers at the old stadium that I guess no longer exists.
The name of the book, Bingo, 40 Years in the NBA. He's Ralph Lawler. Ralph, please tell me retirement. Do you play bingo? Is that still a thing that people do in retirement?
I feel like I would have an unfair advantage.
It'd be worth it, though. Everybody would just be worth it rooting for Ralph Lawler. Thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. And who's the unlucky soul that had to do the audiobook on this, given how great and legendary of a broadcaster you were?
Well, I, if the book is successful enough, there will be an audio book. I, of course, will do it myself, which would be a pleasure to do because it would be a sign of some success for the book, which early indications are that it's doing pretty well. We've had good success. I had a couple of appearances down in San Diego 2 weeks ago, and it was great seeing some old San Diego Clipper fans. They still are hanging out around there from here and there, and it was fun to see them.
Thank you, Ralph. So much. Happy holidays. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we really look forward to reading the book. We have the copies of it just delivered, so we're excited to get into it.
Thank you, Darren. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Ralph Lawler, everybody. A longtime voice. He's the Kurt Gowdy Award recipient 2019 in the basketball, Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Somebody who's just got, how many more hours could we do with that? You know, talking about some of those stories. I mean, we just started scratching the surface on Hadle and Unitas and Coryell and some of those great stories that he must have had from back in the early 70s. I know the book's about the NBA, and think about all the things that he saw in 40 years. Think about what he saw. And there's a whole chapter of this book. I did get a preview, a digital preview, about all the drugs that were in the 80s. Talks at great length about what was going on with some of these players. We could have spent time on Donald Sterling and talked about the transition from that ownership group into Ballmer and what it would mean for the Clippers now, a destination where Kawhi Leonard ended up going. You kidding me? And Paul George. So, there's so much there. 40 years. Hard to even get it into one book. So imagine how difficult it would be getting it into one conversation.
Do you listen to a lot of audiobooks, Darren?
I don't, actually.
Neither do I.
And for no real reason. I know people, you know, usually people who spend a bunch of time driving say that they like listening to audiobooks if you're driving across the country. But I'm also under a mountain of podcasts that I haven't listened to either.
No, right. But I'm asking that only because, I mean, I love to read. I love reading, right? But with Ralph Lawler would be the one, just the way his voice and the way he's such a great storyteller, I would love to listen to him with the audiobook.
Right. I thought maybe he'd outsource that to somebody. I was trying to throw my hat into the ring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Have him go, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, but you've got an interesting voice, and these are decent questions. Why don't you do it?
Right. I need to go back and enjoy my Florida sun.
Now, Marty, would you agree that these young broadcasters today, they just, you know, there's just nothing there. There's just nothing to them.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Your cookie cutters, right?
Yeah. Just very cookie cutter.
That's
not
very
a lot of sizzle to them.
No, none. No.
Just all sound the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
You guys are the worst.
Who was that? Who just
said I'm sorry?
That? Who was it? Was that? Is that Jim? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Jonathan? I'm sorry. I get you guys confused all the time. You sound the same.
That was Schaefer. Wasn't it? Was that not John Schaefer?
I'm
sorry.
Not sure.
I'm not there. They all sound the same.
That's great. Hey, a shout out for Ted, too. I love that.
Yeah, I have heard Walton say that. Like Walt again, and you know, Bill says a lot of weird stuff, but he did say he feels personally responsible for the Clippers relocating to Los Angeles. Now I don't know that you could have stopped Donald Sterling.
No,
but maybe I wasn't there. Who knows that because his health failed and the team failed that nobody went, as Lawler's saying, like, you know, we'd had a great time, but nobody's there. Mm. And how about I'm like, yeah, we're going to get a new arena.
Okay.
We're talking about the early 80s. It's 2022. We're still talking about the same crappy arena.
I'm surprised you didn't give him an update. I'm like, listen, Measure C passed. We think they're gonna raise the limits. Yeah, there's a new one.
I was listening. Speaking of, I was listening to the Voice 80s. Of San Diego podcast recently, and Andy Keats, who's a unique person, and Scott Lewis were talking about how this is going to end up back in court. You know, like this. Even though this Measure E or C or whichever the latest version is passed, that it's going back into the courtroom. And the same people who sued on the 2020 balloting are going to sue on the same grounds that they sued for then. And they feel very good about their chances. And Andy's like, Andy Keats, he's got a very sardonic, I guess, would be the right way. Mm-hmm. He has a very twisted humor, sense of humor. He said, what will happen is the 2020 lawsuit will be appealed, and that will win, and then 2022 will get shot down in a courtroom, so we won't even know what direction this is all heading. But that's amazing that Ralph Lawler's talking about a new arena.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. 40 years ago.
But we're making progress?
Hey, Ralph, tell us about the Kobe swap meet. What was your favorite item? What'd you get there? Yeah. All right, we'll be back. Some TV listings next.